because Skoda's like a big car maker. She was working at like a modern.
Yeah, how big a car maker? No, bro. I've heard of Datsun, and they're like small time. What the? What?
That's Eastern European, right?
So. I think VW owns them, but yes, they're a Czech automaker originally.
Okay.
Like, so they're not a Ford then? They're not a Ford or a Chevy. I'm not interested.
So those aren't cars then, right? Those are just scrap metal taped together, right?
He next traveled to Munich. And he would also work in a...
Nah. We're only going to talk about these cars for the rest of the episode, all right?
It's over.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve. And Ryan.
Shout out to the Gators, beating Ole Miss, and Ole Miss's blubbering, crying quarterback. That's all I will say about that. Steve, tell me more about the 97 Warped Tour.
So... it was very fun. I had a good time. Literally, there was not a single clean porta potty, which I think is just that's a normal concert experience. But like,
yeah.
But at the same time, it was a little ridiculous. Like, you just every single one you went into had some other like weird impressionistic art thing that was going on. surrealist. Like, it was just ridiculous. I was like, dude, I think I might have to call like the Ghostbusters for this one. This is a mess in here.
Every porta potty was like an Andy Warhol painting.
Yeah, and if you wanted to get somewhere, it was such a good mix of bands. Like, there's a lot of good punk there. Like, Pennywise was there and stuff. But then, like, Seven Dust was there. You remember Seven Dust?
Oh, dude, fuck yeah. I actually listened to them the other day.
It was great. Yeah, it was good, man. They pop up
on my YouTube music every now and then.
We went to watch Pennywise, really. That was why I was there. I was a huge Pennywise fan. And, you know, unfortunately... there was this other band that I liked too, the Lunachicks, and they were awesome, but there were infinitely more Pennywise fans, and at one point they started a chant which was like, the Lunachicks suck, go the fuck off, like, or get the fuck off, or something like that, and we just kept doing it until they literally cut their set. I felt so bad. I was like, did they just cut their set? Oh no.
I mean...
And then Pennywise came out, and Jim, I think his name's Jim, I can't remember, came out and said, It's About Time, which is the name of their album, and we lost our shit. It was fucking awesome.
I went to Warped Tour in, I want to say, 2001, and while the porta potties didn't look like impressionist art, they were still terrible. But I want to say that it was like Sum 41 was like the main reason we went there, but Pennywise was definitely there in 01, too. I can remember Pennywise.
Yeah. Anyways,
but it was
great.
Excellent, man. And like I said, I got tickets. Well, my girlfriend got the tickets because I was at work and wasn't paying attention what time it was when things started going on sale. But she got the tickets, so we got tickets. We're going to Warped Tour, and I really don't want to be disappointed. Like, I really don't.
Nah, Warped Tour is great. I learned about Gogol Bordello at the one in, I think, 2003, 2004.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember what year it was. I learned about them there. I got to see Against Me, which was a lifetime thing for me. I was like right in, I guess it's proper to call her by her name, Laura Jane Grace's face, and we were just singing at each other, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Oh, it's fucking crazy.
But speaking of Vans.
I don't think I've had a bad time at Warped Tour. Yeah, speaking of Vans.
Speaking of music, we're going to be talking about a lesser-known Jackson, Tito Jackson.
Oh, for real?
Dude, you can't talk about him, because you don't know where he is. No one does.
No,
you guys don't know that joke?
Which one?
From Beavis and Butthead. Where's Tito? Oh, man, I'm going to find this for you. All right, but anyway, go ahead.
But anyways, we're going to be talking about one, Josip Broz, or Tito, as he would come to be known later on in life.
Okay.
Oh, you're talking about Tito, the government guy, right?
Yes, the Yugoslavian political leader.
Yeah, okay.
He was not talking about the literal Tito Jackson.
I mean, you know, I don't know. Steve got some eclectic shit on here, you know?
Brought to you by Tito's vodka.
Yeah. Tito's handmade vodka, dude. Get it together.
That's Alex Jones's favorite vodka, by the way.
Yeah, because it's the first bottle in the store. That's why.
Oh, this one looks good right here, Joe Rogan. All right, let's get this one.
But
glug, 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 glug.
Exactly. Josip Broz was born on May 7th, 1892 in Kumrovec, which Josip is a village.
Broz?
Yeah. Broz is his family name.
Huh. Okay.
Born in a in the village of Kumrovec, which is a village in northern in the northern Croatian region of Zagreb.
I think I went to that town in Tarkov when I was playing Escape from Tarkov. I think I ended up in that town at one point.
Yeah, his name, like his full name, is like a sentence. Like something. It's like it sounds like a white guy trying to talk like a black guy and saying. And telling him to go drink some of, like, Alex Jones vodka. Yo, sip Bros Tito. See? Like the guy from Ghost, Power Book 4, the white guy.
Oh, yeah.
That guy. Fucking Tommy Egan, yeah. Yo, sip Bros Tito.
He's like a fucking antibiotic.
Yeah. Josip Broz Tito should not be taken if you're allergic or if you're pregnant.
Josip Broz Tito diarrhea, conjunctivitis, death.
Yeah, things death worse than diarrhea. Death. Long death, which we don't want to go over in this commercial. And
at the time, this village was a part of the Kingdom of Croatia and Slavonia, which was within the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
As I say, Slavonia no longer exists.
He was the seventh or eighth child of one Franjo Broz and Maria Broz ni Javrasek. His parents had already had a number of children die in early infancy, so we're not really sure like what child he was. And also, too, because record keeping back then was very spotty.
Mm-hmm.
He was christened and raised as a Roman Catholic. His father was Croatian, and had lived in, and his family had lived in the village in which he was born for three centuries. Well, his mother was a Slovene from the village of Pozreda.
I was reading about that recently. Like, there are families, I guess, that are currently being massacred in fucking Palestine that date back to like the time of Christ. Is that even like possible?
So they're just, like, wiping out a whole, like, historical family.
Oh, yeah. The joke is not funny. It's sick, but...
I'm about to say, be careful.
The thing people... I heard people talking about, I think it was on Chapo, is that, like, they were making a joke because all the Christian right is, like, pro-Israel, but they're literally slaughtering a lot of Christians.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck is going... Make up your mind, boys.
Formulating a solid opinion and sticking to that opinion has never been a Christian strong suit.
No. I'll tell you some Christian shenanigans. The fucking evangelical church down the street. Sorry, I was going to say something else, but I decided to say church in a snobby way. They they have like a drive-through Christmas light show.
Yeah.
$30, bro.
What?
$30.
What?
They have, like, Major League Christianity over there. They don't fucking pay taxes. The building is the size of the goddamn sun. And, you know, every single person goes there is, like, has, like, goon squads coming to their house to make sure the fucking tithe is accurate. And they need my $30 to look at Christmas lights?
Yeah, they're gonna come.
Also, you can see all these Christmas lights from the highway. So...
Yeah, they're gonna come break your knees if you don't give them your tithes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, how are you going to prosper if you don't pay us? You have to give me 10% of your income, and then you got to earn more than that, you know? And it goes up.
It's absolutely fucking incredible that there's still people that buy into that.
Ignoramus bullshit.
It is what it is.
The villages that his parents were from were about 10 miles apart from each other. Because like I said, the village was in the northern part of Croatia, so bordering on Slovenia, or modern-day Slovenia, I should say. Before, like, someone gets mad and starts going on about, like, you know, greater Slovenia.
Is that where, what's her nuts is from? Trump's wife?
Yes, Melania is from Slovenia.
I mean, they're technically married.
Yeah.
On paper, anyway.
His parents were married on January 22nd, or 21st, 1881. His father had inherited a 10-acre estate and a good house, but he was unable to make a success in farming. Yosef would spend a significant portion of his preschool years living with his maternal grandparents at Ponsreda, where he became a favorite of his grandfather, Martin Yeversek. By the time he returned to Kumrovec to begin school, he spoke Slovene better than Croatian and had learned to play the piano. Despite his mixed parentage, though, he would identify throughout his life as a Croat, like his father and
as
his neighbors. A Croat.
Oh.
In July of 1900, at the age of 8, he entered the primary school at Kumrovec. He completed 4 years of schooling, failing the second grade, and graduating in 1905.
How the fuck do you fail second grade?
I mean, there were some kids that, you know, that got held behind after kindergarten. They had, like, a class that was, like, between first grade and kindergarten.
Why? They couldn't scribble? Like, what the fuck? What do you learn in kindergarten that would hold you back? Do you still, like, piss your pants or something? Like, what? What?
Alphabet.
How is this a thing? The alpha... Jesus Christ. Okay.
To be honest with you, I think a lot of...
They're children.
I think a lot of the reason that they fail probably is just, like, not doing it. You know what I mean? Like, they're not participating in the class at all, or they have behavioral problems, you know?
Right. Right.
At that time, though, there's probably a million reasons why they might fail. Probably just don't go.
I'm just like, I just, I don't know.
You gotta stay home and help.
What if... Yeah, one of those things, though, does sort of stay true for Tito, because due to his limited schooling, it's said that throughout his life he was always bad at spelling.
Mm.
After leaving school, he initially worked for a maternal uncle and then on his parents' farm. In 1907, his father wanted him to emigrate to the United States but could not raise the money for the voyage. Instead of being able to go to the United States at 15, Braz would leave Kumrovec and traveled about 60 miles south to Sisak, where his cousin, Eureka Braz, was doing army service. Eureka helped him get a job in a restaurant, but he would soon get tired of that work.
Yeah, dude, working in a fucking restaurant suck, bro. Good to know that they've sucked working in all the way back to, like, fucking 1900.
He would approach a Czech locksmith, Nikola Karas, and would do a three-year apprenticeship, which included training, food, room, and board. His father could not afford to pay for his work clothing, so Braz paid for it himself. Soon after, his younger brother, Stefan, also would become an apprentice to Karas.
Okay.
During his apprenticeship, he was encouraged to march on May Day in 1909, and he read and sold a socialist newspaper, which was called The Free Word. After completing his apprenticeship in September of 1910, he used his contacts to gain employment in Zagreb. At age 18, he joined the Metal Workers
Serbia.
Union and participated in his first labor protest.
Yeah, back when you could protest, you know, in 1910, to not just get shot.
Not so fast. he also joined the Social Democratic Party of Croatia and Slavonia.
God damn it.
He would return home in 1910, and in early 1911, he began a series of moves in search of work, first to Ljubljana, then Trieste, Kumrovec, and Zagreb, where he worked repairing bicycles.
Hmm.
He joined his first strike on May Day of 1911, and after a brief period working in Ljubljana, between May 1911 and May 1912, he worked at a factory in Komnik in the Komnik-Savinia Alps. After that was closed, he was offered redeployment to Zenkov in Bohemia. On arriving at his new workplace, he discovered that the employer was trying to bring in cheaper labor to replace the local Czech workers, and he and others joined successful strike actions to force the employer to back down at doing this. Driven by curiosity, Braz moved to Plzeň, where he was briefly employed at the Skoda Works.
What was he curious about?
I think just, like, working at, like, because Skoda's, like, a big car maker. So just working out like I've a never modern. Heard of them.
Yeah, how big a car maker? No, bro. I've heard of Datsun, and they're like small time. What the? What?
That's Eastern European, VW, right?
So I think VW owns them, but yes, they're a Czech automaker originally.
Okay.
Like, so they're not a Ford then? They're not a Ford or a Chevy. I'm not interested.
So those aren't cars then, right? Those are just scrap metal taped together, right?
He next traveled to Munich. and he would also work in a...
Nah. We're only going to talk about these cars for the rest of the episode, all right?
It's over.
How long did it take him to get to Munich, huh? Those things got
16
like... 16
days
a 1 mile
car.
Per gallon, so...
Top speed of 7.
It gets 8 hectares to a single liter case. he would also work in a Benz car factory in Mannheim and visited the Ruhr industrial region. By October 1912, he had reached Vienna. He stayed with his older brother Martin and his family and worked at the Gretel works before getting a job at the Wiener Neustadt. There he worked for Austro Daimler and was often asked to drive and test the cars.
Oh, he was a fucking test driver for Chrysler? That's cool.
During this time, he would spend a considerable time fencing and dancing. And during his training and early work life, he also learned to speak German and passable Czech.
So he's into what, 4 languages now?
About. He generally learns like a whole bunch of languages, which is impressive for somebody who, you know, has such a limited education.
Yeah, but I mean, also, that part of the world where you have so many different cultures and countries kind of condensed into that one place, it's not unheard of for those people to be multilingual. And not just bilingual, but, like, multilingual.
In May 1913, Braz was conscripted into the Austro-Hungarian Army for his compulsory 2 years of service. He successfully requested to serve with the 25th Croatian Home Guard Regiment, garrisoned in Zagreb. After learning to ski during the winter of 1913 and 1914, Braz was sent to a school for non-commissioned officers in Budapest, after which he was promoted to sergeant major.
How long after?
Probably not long after.
That's good enough for me. I don't need a long answer there.
We're just grinding this bitch to a halt.
at the age of 22, he was the youngest serving sergeant major in the Austro-Hungarian Army.
Okay, before we go any further, Steve, let me ask you this. Steve, I want you to help me out here. Am I gonna hate Tito?
Yeah,
probably not, because like he's still like very much liked in like the former Yugoslavia.
You're going to hate him, dude.
Is he on some fucking nonsense, or is this, like, a cool episode? Like, just kind of let me get ready for this.
He's kind of a cool guy. He still ran an oppressive government, but it was, like, one of the more benevolent oppressive communist states.
What?
Yeah.
What?
He was a slave owner, but it was one of the nice slave owners. You know?
Oh, my fucking God. All right. Okay. Okay. All right. I buy that.
Yeah. Like, he would trade a whipping for an HJ, you know?
Instead of hitting you 10 times, I was going to hit you 5. Yep. Like, you know.
Oh, my God.
After winning the regimental fencing competition, he came in second in the Army Fencing Championships in Budapest in May of 1914. Unfortunately for him, soon after the outbreak of World War One in 1914, the 25th Croatian Home Guard Regiment marched toward the Serbian border. During this, Braz would be arrested for sedition and imprisoned in the Petrovaradin fortress in present-day Novi Sad.
Yeah, you want to stay out of there. That's hard time.
That doesn't sound like a good place to be.
It has sad in the name.
Oh, my God.
He later gave conflicting accounts of why he was arrested, telling one biographer that he had threatened to desert to the Russian side, but also claiming that the whole matter arose from a clerical error. A third version was that he had been overheard saying that he hoped the Austro-Hungarian Empire would be defeated.
I mean, who doesn't?
After his acquittal and release, his regiment served briefly on the Serbian front before being deployed to the Eastern Front in Galicia in early 1915 to fight against Russia. In his account of his military service, Broz did not mention that he participated in the failed Austrian invasion of Serbia, instead giving the misleading impression that he fought only in Galicia, as it would have offended Serbian opinion to know that he fought in 1914 for the Habsburgs against them.
Okay.
On one occasion, the scout platoon he commanded went behind enemy lines and captured 80 Russian soldiers, bringing them back to their own lines alive.
Okay.
In 1980, as well, it was discovered that Broz had been recommended for an award for gallantry, an initiative in reconnaissance and capturing prisoners.
Gallantry.
Yeah, and gallantry.
You know what, though, Broz? You know why he got so much done? Because he didn't have to do what I did tonight. Just go to Taco Bell, and you get the box, because it's, like, the most inexpensive, you know? Oh, and you eat it. But it doesn't always feel like there's, like, one item missing, you know?
Those boxes. You just need, like, one more thing.
Yeah, like if there was, like,
kind of put you over the top.
Yeah, if there was, like, one more taco, or maybe, like, a double burrito in there, you know? Could it really cost him that much? He could keep the same price and just throw that shit in there.
I think my buddy worked at Taco Bell in high school, and I think he worked it out, and I think Taco Bell pays, like, literal, when you look at it, like, literal pennies per soft taco and hard taco, just your basic taco.
They probably pay less than pennies, you know?
It's like, a couple pennies is what it is, and then you figure they're selling it, like, for, what, a dollar now? It's not even, like, 50 cents like it used to be or some shit?
50 cents, do you remember that? You go at, like, 2 o'clock in the morning...
They're just like, here, take the rest of what we have, because we're going to close, so just take all the shit. Yeah. Just give us a couple bucks, we don't care.
You hoping they're still open? But they were.
The man just hands you a trash bag full of, like, chalupas.
Dude, that's happened. I have a friend that actually happened to me. He went to Taco Bell really late at night, and they had decided to close, like, 5 or 10 minutes early. And he's sitting in the drive-thru, and they hadn't, like, turned the lights off or anything yet. Someone walks by and is just like, what the fuck? And he just hands him this massive sack of food they were just about to throw out. He's like, incredible. I'll take it.
My buddy would do that. He worked at Dunkin' Donuts when we were in high school.
When was this? It's long enough for petty theft or whatever this is going to be, you know?
But they had to throw out the donuts at night. And he would just put them in a trash bag and just, like, take them to wherever we were hanging out.
Absolutely, dude.
Dude,
that's amazing.
Yeah, you'd be my best friend. Dunkies, donuts, and you just coming out, like, just coming through the spot? Bro, you'd be my best friend.
Your boy comes over with, like, an IKEA load of donuts? I mean, let's go. Yeah.
He's just got them all in the back of his Ford F-150.
Pours them out into the room. You can't see each other. You gotta, like, swim through, like, an Oblivion glitch. Like a Dupac, you know?
Oh, I think I found a Boston cream.
And then you turn it to Homer in space, where you just eat your way through.
Tito's biographer, Richard West, wrote that Tito actually downplayed his military record, as the Austrian army records showed that he was a brave soldier, which contradicted his later claim to have opposed the Habsburg monarchy and his self-portrait of himself as an unwilling conscript fighting in a war he opposed.
Okay.
His fellow soldiers also regarded him as Kaisertruppe. Meaning true to the emperor.
Huh.
Okay.
On
the
March
Holy 20th, Roman Emperor?
Yeah, but also, what emperor are we talking about?
Whoa, easy there. I know you're Hungarian kind, like to throw that term around, but no, technically they're not the Holy Roman Emperor. I think the last one was during Napoleon, like the one that could actually call themselves that.
So what emperor are we talking about then?
It is the essentially the Austrian Emperor.
Oh, okay.
The Hungarians were like a minor partner at this point.
Yeah,
gotcha.
On March 25th, 1915, Broz was wounded in the back by a Circassian cavalryman's lance, and captured during a Russian attack near Bukovina.
Okay.
In his account of the capture, Broz wrote, Suddenly the right flank yielded, and through the gap poured cavalry of the Circassian from Asiatic Russia. Before we knew it, they were thundering through our position, leaping from their horses and throwing themselves into our trenches with lances lowered. One of them rammed his 2-yard, iron-tipped, double-pronged lance into my back just below the left arm.
Fuck.
I fainted. Then, as I learned, the Circassians began to butcher the wounded, even slashing them with their knives. Fortunately, Russian infantry reached the position and put an end to the orgy.
Bro, war used to be fucking insane, dude.
Yeah, it was arguably more brutal.
Arguably?
But the scale of things is different now. And the impersonal nature of it is creepy, to say the least.
You watch, like, old war movies and shit like that. Like, I know they're not... They're movies, right? But you get a sense of, like, it's... Everything is just so brutal and just up close and personal. It's just...
Yeah. It's almost a good thing. I mean, it's kind of gotten us where we are now that all those, you know, that nuclear weapons were invented. Because regular war is more or less dead. It's always fought over, like, political reasons.
Yeah, but why would you want nuclear war instead? It's worse.
No, I said it's good that the weapons were created because then you won't have all-out wars.
I gotcha.
They're a deterrent in and of themselves in a certain way.
Yeah.
Now...
Because Russia dropped those bombs on Ukraine recently. They used missile, the rocket is essentially nuclear capable. Uh-huh. And they called the U.S. allegedly beforehand because they're supposed to let us know when they use certain types of weapons.
Right.
Well, yeah, because if they launch it and you don't know where it's going, like you have only like so little time to respond. Now being a prisoner of war, Braz was transported east to a hospital established in an old monastery in the town of Sviazhsk, on the Volga River near Kazan. During his 13 months in the hospital, he had bouts of pneumonia and typhus. And learned Russian with the help of 2 schoolgirls who brought him Russian classics by authors such as Tolstoy and Turgenev.
Tolstoy's good.
Yeah, that's really what he was hanging out with those 2 Russian schoolgirls to learn Russian. Right.
What kind of schoolgirls? Like college, right?
Probably not.
Terrible.
That's going to be one of the bad things about Braz, which we'll get to.
One of the bad things? Is he a diddler? Pedophilia?
Is he a diddler?
It's one of the bad things?
Well, he married the 13-year-old.
No.
How old was he?
27.
It's still not good.
13-year-old in what, 1913? No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to talk about that shit. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
I'm saying, you know, like, you see, we make fun of the pictures of, like, old baseball players who are in their 20s, and they look like they're in their fucking 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah, the girl in his defense, they look like Baba Yaga, so.
Jesus Christ.
After recuperating in mid-1916, Braz was transferred to the Artatov POW camp in the Samara Governorate, where he used his skills to maintain the nearby village grain mill. By the end of the year, he was transferred to the Kungur POW camp near Perm, where the POWs were used as labor to maintain the newly completed Trans-Siberian Railway.
You're going to tell me that entire Siberian Railway is trans?
They're the only ones allowed on it. All right.
So you mean to tell me that Mike was hard when he made this lemonade?
Braz was appointed to be in charge of all POWs in the camp, and during this time, he became aware that camp staff were stealing the Red Cross parcels sent to the POWs.
You can't do that.
When he complained, he was beaten and imprisoned.
Fuck?
Who beat him?
The guards.
That's fucked up.
He's like, you're stealing our packages. And they're like, what are you going to do with
it? It's so fucked up.
During the February Revolution, a crowd broke into the prison and returned Braz to the POW camp. A Bolshevik he had met while working on the railway told Braz that his son was working in working in engineering works in Petrograd. So in June of 1917, Braz walked out of the unguarded POW camp and hit aboard a goods train bound for the city, where he stayed with his friend's son.
He just walked out of the POW camp?
Well, yeah, because the February Revolution's happened, you know, the Tsar's been overthrown, and I guess they just, like, nobody was, they were just on the honor system at that point. Wow. They're also in the middle of Siberia, so it's not like, you know, they're okay, just gonna, like,
going anywhere.
It's going to be a long time for your Uber to come pick you up. the journalist Richard West has suggested that because Braz chose to remain in an unguarded POW camp rather than volunteer to serve with the Yugoslav legions of the Serbian army, he was still loyal to the Austro-Hungarian Empire, undermining his later claim that he and the other Croat POWs were excited by the prospect of revolution and looked forward to the overthrow of the empire that ruled them.
Okay.
Less than a month after he arrived in Petrograd, the July Days demonstrations broke out, and Braz joined in, coming under fire from government troops. In the aftermath of this, he tried to flee to Finland in order to make his way to the United States, but was stopped at the border. He was arrested along with other suspected Bolsheviks during the subsequent crackdowns by the Russian provisional government led by Alexander Kerensky. He was imprisoned in the Peter and Paul Fortress for 3 weeks, during which he claimed to be an innocent citizen of Perm.
Perm?
What do
you... Yeah, what up, big Perm? I said big worm.
When he finally admitted to being an escaped POW, he was returned by train to Kungur, but escaped at Ekaterinburg, and then caught another train and reached Omsk in Siberia on November 8th after a 2,000-mile journey. At one point, the police searched the train looking for an escaped POW, but were deceived by his fluent Russian. In Omsk, local Bolsheviks stopped the train and told Braz that Vladimir Lenin had seized control of Petrograd. They recruited him into an international Red Guard that guarded the Trans-Siberian Railway during the winter of 1917 and 18. In May of 1918, the anti-Bolshevik Czechoslovak Legion wrested control of parts of Siberia from Bolshevik forces. The provisional Siberian government established itself in Omsk, and Braz and his comrades went into hiding. At this time, Braz met a 14-year-old girl, one Pelagia Polka Belosova.
This doesn't sound like it's going to be good.
Pelagia Polka. Hit him,
who hit him and then helped him escape to a Kazakh village.
Oh, I thought you said 40 she miles hit from him. Omsk.
Yeah, I thought she said you hit him too, and I was like, wow, that's fucked up.
She hit him with her Skoda, or whatever that car was. It just kind of, like, fucking ripped his pants a little. It's car's not really moving that fast. It's not a bullet, you know, it's not a bullet.
Just, you know, shaped around him like Superman, and it ran into him.
It's crazy, too. Like, they both saw it coming. Like, they were staring at each other for a solid 20 seconds before the impact. You know, mouth agape, the car's going about, I don't know, 0.25 miles per hour. she hits him, and she gets mad at him, and he just thought that was very endearing, so they got married.
Braz would again work maintaining the local mill until 1919, when the Red Army recaptured Omsk from the White Forces, loyal to the provisional all-Russian government of Alexander Kolchak.
I'm sorry, but the Red Army just sounds cool, and it will never not sound cool.
The Red Army back... sounds cool? Okay.
I don't know why, it just sounds like if you, like, read Warhammer, you would know what I mean. Like, it kind of sounds like a, I don't know, like a specialized unit in some military, the Red Army. So the Red Army is attacking, oh shit.
Gotcha.
He moved back to Omsk and married Belosova in January of 1920. At the time of their marriage, Braz was 27 years old and she was 14.
Ugh.
They would eventually later divorce in the 1930s. Braz would later write of his time in Russia. He heard much talk of Lenin, a little Trotsky, and as for Stalin, during the time I stayed in Russia, I never once heard his name. He would join the Communist Party in 1920 in Omsk, and in the autumn of 1920, he and his pregnant wife returned to his homeland by train to Narva, by ship to Stettin, and then by train to Vienna, where they arrived in September on September 20th. In early October, he would return to Kumrovec in what was then the Kingdom of Serbs, Croats, and Slovenes, to find that his mother had died and his father had moved to Jastrebarsko near Zagreb. Sources differ over whether he joined the Communist Party of the Soviet Union while in Russia, but he said that the first time he joined the Communist Party of Yugoslavia was in Zagreb after he returned to his homeland.
Okay.
Upon his return home, he was unable to gain employment as a metal worker in Kumrovec, so he and his wife moved briefly to Zagreb, where he worked as a waiter and took part in a waiter's strike.
How come he couldn't get work?
Probably just because of, like, after the war, things were, like, there wasn't a lot of, like, industry.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah, but it sounds like he got turned down, you know? So evidently there was enough industry for him to go in for an interview, but...
No, we're a family business.
Oh shit, I got to get the fuck out of here. They said the family, I can't fucking believe it. Just leaves.
He would also join
when
the
Communist Party. I interview guys, that's one of the things I say at the end. I'm like, nobody here's going to tell you that we're a family. This is a work environment.
No. Yeah, no, we work together, bro. That's it.
Yep.
He would also join the Communist Party Yugoslavia during this time. And the CPY's influence on the political life of Yugoslavia was growing rapidly. In the 1920 election, it won 59 seats and became the Serb's strongest party.
59?
59.
That's wild.
59 seats?
I know, it's hard to believe, Steve.
Well, there's only 58 seats, so I don't know how they're all going to sit down.
In light of the difficult economic and social circumstances, the regime viewed the Communist Party as the main threat to the system of government. Mm-hmm. On December 30th, the government issued a proclamation outlawing communist activities, which included bans on propaganda, assembly halls, stripping of civil service for servants, and scholarships for students found to be communist. Okay. Its author, Milorad Drašković, the Yugoslav Minister of the Interior, was assassinated by a young communist, Alija Aljagić, on August 2nd, 1921.
Okay.
The Communist Party was then declared illegal under the Yugoslav State Security Act of 1921, and the regime proceeded to prosecute party members and sympathizers as political prisoners.
I feel like that happened a lot in Eastern Europe in the 20s, that, like, communism was, like, outlawed. Like, made illegal, or am I crazy?
Yeah, it was pretty common.
Okay,
that's why communists were, like, really good at being spies, because when your entire political party has to essentially hide all the time, like, you get really good at it.
Yeah.
Due to his overt communist links, he was fired from his job. He and his wife then moved to the village Veliko Trostova, where he worked as a mill mechanic. After the arrest of the Communist Party's leadership in January of 1922, Stevo Sabic took over control of its operations.
Good old Stevo.
You know what? He pays well. He takes care of his people. I'm okay with it.
Sabic contacted Braz, who agreed to work illegally for the party, distributing leaflets and agitating among factory workers.
Joseph, you don't talk about Mr. Braz like that in this family.
He was a hero.
In this house, he's a hero.
He was a Croat and a hero.
Daddy, what's a Croat? I'll tell you what it's not, son. Jewish. Now, anyway.
Roman Catholic. And we use the Latin script. It is funny because, like, Serbians and Croatians speak pretty much the same language. There's, like, variations on it.
Yeah, the black speech from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, they speak, but it's a little more guttural in Serbia.
It's worse. You know, they called us the Uruk-hai, but we're not even close to that. We're way worse.
But Serbian uses Cyrillic script, and Serbians are usually traditionally Eastern Orthodox, and Croatians are traditionally Roman Catholic.
Dude, but, I'm sorry, your mic like is occasionally like auto-tuning you because there's lag. It's hilarious.
There was a case where I think he was a Croatian nationalist or a Serbian nationalist. And that that he demanded to have a translator because he was being tried in a Serbian court.
Yeah,
and so they just had to have a guy essentially just say what he'd already said.
Serbian court, that's a bad look.
Because he was adamant that Croatian and Serbian were completely different languages.
Damn well they're not.
in the contest of ideas between those that wanted to pursue moderate policies and those that advocated violent revolution. Braz sided with the latter.
Any special reason why?
I'm not really sure. I think it was just he seemed to probably prefer that as opposed to like an armed revolution, probably from his time in Russia.
Okay.
In 1924, he was elected to the Communist Party District Committee, but after he gave a speech at a comrade's Catholic funeral, he was arrested when the priest complained. Paraded through the streets in chains, he was held for 8 days and was eventually charged with creating a public disturbance.
This guy, can't stay out of trouble.
Yeah, he's like our boy Trotsky, but instead of going to different countries, he's going to all these jails.
Listen, I'm just saying, I can't find my keys. I don't know why you keep kicking him out of each country, but hey, you know, hey, it's fine. I'll be back.
With I haven't been here for 100 episodes, but I'm back now.
Hello. I forgot my keys.
I went through every country on earth and I had to come back.
With the help of a Serbian Orthodox prosecutor who hated Catholics, Braz and his co-accused were acquitted. Though his run-in with the law had marked him as a communist agitator, and his home was searched on an almost weekly basis, and since their arrival in Yugoslavia, Plagia had lost three babies soon after their births, and one daughter, Zlatica, at the age of two.
Zlatica?
Zlatica. That sounds like some like actor's daughter that goes to like Coachella, you know? Well, Zlatica went with her friends.
He would be deeply affected by the loss of his one daughter.
Yeah, no shit.
In 1924.
How old was he then? 30?
Yes. Because it was 1924, so that puts him about, yeah.
Not that there's a good time to lose a kid or anything, I'm just saying.
In 1924, his wife would give birth to a boy, Zarko, who survived.
Zarko.
It's kind of a cool name.
No way, dude. Think about it this way. What if it was Red Zarko?
In mid-1925, Braz's employer died, and the new mill owner gave him an ultimatum. Give up his communist allegiances or lose his job.
Ooh.
So at the age of 33...
You're either quitting that softball team or you're out of here, pal.
Everybody's got to sign up. Everybody's got to take a turn cleaning the fridge, all right?
Who doesn't want to wear the ribbon?
So at the age of 33, he would become a professional revolutionary.
You could do that as a professional revolutionary?
Yeah, it's right? A bit tough, but...
It's a tough gig, but somebody's got to do it. Might as well be Tito.
Hey!
The Communist Party concentrated its revolutionary efforts on factory workers in the more industrialized areas of Croatia and Slovenia, encouraging strikes and similar actions. In 1925, the now unemployed Braz moved to Kraljevica on the Adriatic coast, where he started working at a shipyard to further the aims of the Communist Party.
Shipyard action, okay.
During his time in Kraljevica, he acquired a love for the Adriatic coastline that lasted for the rest of his life, And throughout his later time as leader, he would spend much time as possible as he could living on his yacht while cruising the Adriatic.
Okay. That's kind of a chill life, though, to be real.
The yacht life. You know, the yacht got life. Got that yeah. Jimmy Buffett plan.
Christopher Cross. Jimmy Buffett. Nah, Jimmy Buffett's more like a boat life. Yacht life, though? Yeah, he's...
Jimmy Buffett is beach life, man. Be real.
Yeah. But yacht life...
I'm sure Tito would have loved Christopher Cross.
Oh, yeah. Sailing this... Shut up. This is the best part. Takes me work.
Just wearing a Hawaiian shirt and sunglasses on the deck of this yacht. Drinking Mai Tais. While at Kraljevica, he worked on Yugoslav torpedo boats and a pleasure yacht for the People's Radical Party politician Milan Stojanovic. He would build up a trade union organization in the shipyards and Pete was elected as a union representative.
He was a baller.
A year later, he led a shipyard strike and soon after was fired.
He couldn't get pumpkin that year.
In October of 1926, he obtained work in a railway works in Smederevska Polanka near Belgrade.
The fact that you responded to that shipyard beer joke tells me you were thinking the same thing, right? The whole time.
In March of 1927, he wrote an article complaining about the exploitation of workers in the factory, and after speaking up for a worker, he was promptly sacked.
Wow.
Oh my god.
This guy, doesn't learn to just keep his mouth shut and then just kind of undermine the authority from, like, the inside.
I mean, his life kind of started that way, right? Because he dropped out of school in the first grade.
Identified by the Communist Party as worthy of promotion, he was appointed secretary of the Zagreb branch of the Metal Workers Union, and soon thereafter, the union's whole Croatian branch.
Nice.
In July of 1927, he was arrested along with six other workers and imprisoned in nearby Ogulin. After being held without trial for some time, he went on a hunger strike until a date was set. The trial was held in secret, and he was found guilty of being a member of the Communist Party. He was sentenced to 4 years imprisonment, but was released from prison pending an appeal. Okay. On the Communist Party's orders, he did not report to court for the hearing of the appeal, and instead going into hiding in Zagreb.
So he just bucked the court date. So he's getting a bench warrant put out for him.
Yeah, but old Tio's got a bench warrant.
Knock if you buck.
That's what you call it. You call bucking the court date. I'm not going to that shit. Fuck that shit. I'm bucking.
He would disguise himself by wearing dark glasses and carrying forged papers. He would pose as a middle-class technician in the engineering industry, working undercover as well to contact other Communist Party members and coordinate their infiltration of trade unions.
Uh-oh.
In February of 1928, he was one of 32 delegates to a conference of the Croatian branch of the Communist Party. During the conference, he condemned factions within the party, including those that advocated a greater Serbia agenda within Yugoslavia, like the long-term Communist Party leader, Sima Marković.
Interesting.
He proposed that the executive committee of the Communist International purge the branch of factionalism and was supported by a delegate sent from Moscow. After it was proposed that the Croatian branch's entire central committee be dismissed, a new central committee was elected, with Braz as the secretary. Marković was subsequently expelled from the Communist Party at the Fourth Congress of the Comintern, and the Communist Party adopted a policy of working for the breakup of Yugoslavia. Braz arranged to disrupt a meeting of the Social Democratic Party on May Day that year. In a melee outside the venue, police would arrest him.
God damn this guy.
They would fail, though, to identify him and charged him under his false name for a breach of the peace. He was imprisoned for 14 days and then released, returning to his previous activities. The police eventually tracked him down with the help of a police informer. He was ill-treated and held for 3 months before being tried in court in November of 1928 for his illegal communist activities, which included allegations that police had planted the bombs found at his address. He was convicted and sentenced to 5 years imprisonment.
How much fucking jail time does this guy do?
A lot.
I feel bad for him, man. Because he's getting jail time for bullshit. Like, he's doing the objectively correct thing, and he's just getting jail time for it. I feel bad for him, man.
You telling me you saved that little girl? She was going to get hit by a... What is it? What's the name of that car brand? It's going to make this joke.
Skoda.
Skoda. She got hit by Skoda. She was going to get hit, and you jumped in front of it. You go to jail. You cured cancer? Prison.
After Braz's sentencing, his wife and son returned to Kumrovic, where sympathetic locals looked after them. But then one day, they would suddenly leave without any explanation and return to the Soviet Union.
Aww.
While there, she would fall in love with another man, and Zarko would grow up in different institutions. After arriving at Lipoglava prison, Braz was employed in maintaining the electrical system and chose as his assistant a middle-class Belgrade Jew, Mosa Piade, who had been given a 20-year sentence for his communist activities.
Jesus!
Their work allowed him and Piade to move around the prison, contacting and organizing other communist prisoners. During their time, Piade would become Braz's ideological mentor. After 2.5 years at the prison, Braz was accused of attempting to escape and was transferred to Maribor prison, where he was held in solitary confinement for several months.
Oof.
After completing the full term of his sentence, he was released only to be arrested outside the prison gates and taken to Ogulin to serve the 4-month sentence he had avoided in 1927.
My God.
Can you imagine doing your 5-year sentence, you get out, and the cops are just sitting there like, yeah, turn around, cuff up. Wait,
guess
what?
I'm done. Now.
I finished my sentence. I'm done. No.
We got DNA. You're going right back in. We got a different sentence for you. They don't even tell you, by the way. They just send you through a door, and you're walking out, and it's just a path that goes right back to the entrance of the jail. You know? You don't even notice. You're just like, what is going on? What the fuck is happening?
You walk back in the door like, oh, welcome back.
It's just Andor when you're about to be released. You're like, oh no, you have to stay another like 5 years.
Shit.
He was finally released from prison on March 16th, 1934. But even then, he was subject to orders that required him to live in Kumrovic and report to the police daily.
So he's on probation. He's on papers. Okay. Don't violate. He's going to catch a violation, I guarantee you.
During his imprisonment, the political situation in Europe had changed radically, with the rise of Adolf Hitler in Germany and the emergence of right-wing parties in France and neighboring Austria.
Doesn't sound very radical to me.
He gets out of prison. He's like, who's this angry little Austrian guy?
You never see that, you know? You never see that.
When did Charlie Chaplin become president of Germany?
He has Chaplin mustache. Look at him.
He would return to Kumrovic to a warm welcome, but did not stay long. In early May, he received word from the Communist Party to return to his revolutionary activities and left his hometown for Zagreb, where he rejoined the Central Committee of the Communist Party of Croatia.
You can't just stop, bro. You have to keep going.
The Croatian branch of the Communist Party was in disarray, a situation that was exacerbated by the escape of the Executive Committee of the Communist Party to Vienna, from which they were directing activities. Over the next 6 months, he would travel several times between Zagreb, Ljubljana, and Vienna using fake passports. In July of 1934, he was blackmailed by a smuggler, but pressed on across the border and was detained by the local Heimwehr, which was a paramilitary home guard of Austria.
Blackmailed by like a smuggler who smuggled him? Or what?
Yeah, there was like a coyote, essentially. Like a guy that was smuggling him across the border.
Got it.
He would use his Austrian accent that he had developed during his war service to convince him that he was a wayward Austrian mountaineer, and they allowed him to proceed to Vienna.
Yeah, my name is Arnold.
My name is Hans.
Schwarzenegger.
Once there, he contacted the General Secretary of the Communist Party, Milan Gorkic, who sent him to Ljubljana to arrange a secret conference of the Communist Party in Slovenia. Conference was held at the Summer Palace.
See, that's just so much bureaucracy.
The conference was held at the Summer Palace of the Roman Catholic Bishop of Ljubljana, whose brother was a communist sympathizer. Hmm. It was at this conference that Braz first met Edvard Cartilage, a young Slovene communist who had recently been released from prison.
Eddie Cartilage.
Braz and Cartilage subsequently became good friends, and Tito would later regard him as his most reliable deputy.
This guy, I give him something to do. It's done.
I only got to tell him once.
That's what I'm looking for.
As he was wanted by the police for failing to report to them in Kumrovic, Braz adopted various pseudonyms, including Rudy and Tito.
Josip Broz Rudy Tito. Homemade vodka.
He used the latter as a pen name when he wrote articles for the party journals in 1934, and it stuck.
Who is this fucking Tito?
He gave a reason for choosing the name Tito. He gave no reason for choosing the name, except that it was a common nickname for men from the district where he grew up.
Interesting.
You just wouldn't think of that with like a Yugoslav. You just would not think of that.
Within the Comintern network, his nickname was Walter.
Yeah, I mean, if you give me the choice between Walter and fucking Tito, I'm going with Tito.
Yeah, all day.
You know?
During this time, he wrote articles on the duties of imprisoned communists.
I mean, Walter sounds like a guy who mends manila folders, you know, rather than getting new ones. Tito just burns them.
He was in Ljubljana when Vlado Chernozemski, an assassin for the Internal Macedonian Revolutionary Organization, an instructor of the Croatian ultra-nationalist organization Ustasa, assassinated King Alexander in Marseille on October 9th, 1934. In the crackdown on dissidents that followed his death, it was decided that Tito should leave Yugoslavia. He traveled to Vienna on a forged Czech passport.
Just get the fuck out of here, all right?
Gorkic and the rest of the Politburo of the Communist Party. It was decided that the Austrian government was too hostile to communism, so the Politburo traveled to Brno in Czechoslovakia, and Tito accompanied him, or accompanied them. On Christmas Day of 1934, a secret meeting of the Central Committee of the Communist Party was held in Ljubljana, and Tito was elected as a member of the Politburo for the first time.
Okay.
The Politburo decided to send him to Moscow to report on the situation in Yugoslavia, and in early February of 1935, he arrived there as a full-time official of the Comintern. He would stay at the main Comintern residence, the Hotel Lux, on Tverskaya Street, and was quickly in contact with Vladimir Kopic, one of the leading Yugoslavs within the Comintern. He was soon introduced to the main personalities in the organization, and he was appointed to the secretariat of the Balkan section, responsible for Yugoslavia, Bulgaria, Romania, and Greece. Cartilage was also in Moscow, as was the Bulgarian communist leader, Georgi Dimitrov. Tito lectured on trade unions to the foreign communists. He attended a course on military tactics run by the Red Army and occasionally attended the Bolshoi Theater.
This guy was well-rounded.
Yeah. He attended the theater. He goes to the opera. He plays a piano. We can discuss Tosca. What's his name? Tchaikovsky.
Digs out for Harambe. You know.
He would attend as one of the 510 delegates to the 7th World Congress of the Comintern in July and August of 1935, and he briefly saw Joseph Stalin for the first time.
Yeah.
After the Congress, he toured the Soviet Union and then returned to Moscow to continue his work. He contacted Polka and Zarko, but soon fell in love with an Austrian woman who worked at the Hotel Lux, Johanna Koenig.
My brain kind of merged those words together. So when you said he contacted Pola and Zarko, I was like, is that a virus of some sort?
In Yeah, the virus of a nagging wife. Am I right, guys?
Hey, listen what I say, yo.
who was known within the communist ranks as Lucia Bauer. When she became aware of this affair that that Tito was having, Polka divorced him in April of 1936.
Imagine getting divorced by the happiest music on earth. You can't be sad at a polka, you know?
You gotta be happy.
Tito would marry Bauer on October 13th of that year.
Wait, Agent Jack Bauer?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, his sister.
Bro. Oh, shit.
After the World Congress, Tito worked to promote the new Comintern line on Yugoslavia, which was that it could no longer work to break up the country and would instead defend the integrity of Yugoslavia against Nazism and fascism.
Like you do.
Like one does.
From a distance, Tito also worked to organize strikes at the shipyards Kraljevica and the coal mines at Tripolvija.
You just mush mouth that one, dude. Well, Steve, you just gave up. That's like me reading. Whenever I read Dostoevsky, I just give up at some point.
I don't think you can not mush mouth this unless there's some like weird.
There's
like,
some hidden, pronunciation hidden. Law, yeah.
But it's the name of this town is T R B O V L J E.
What?
Oh, man.
Wait, I feel like I'm having a stroke just listening to that.
Pronounce it how you pronounced it?
Tribolvia?
Nah, you did a much better job that time. That sounded fine.
Near Ljubljana. He tried to convince the Comintern that it would be better if the party leadership were located inside Yugoslavia. A compromise was arrived at where Tito and others would work inside the country and Gorkic and the Politburo would continue to work from abroad.
Okay.
Gorkic and the Politburo relocated to Paris, while Tito began to travel between Moscow, Paris, and Zagreb in 1936 and 1937.
Meanwhile,
using falsified passports.
Fucking boss is working from home. Son of a bitch.
In 1936, his father would die.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Tito would return to Moscow in August of 1936.
Was his dad an asshole? Or?
Well, I mean, I don't think he was.
You're talking about dads in the 1930s. I'm sorry, in the 1800s when he was actually like born. But yeah, dude, he was absolutely an asshole.
I agree with you. I think there was probably a higher chance, but maybe not necessarily, right?
He was considered weird and creepy because he had once hugged his son and told him he was proud of him. So,
look at the way he touches that boy.
The only thing you could touch was the switch. And he just starts hitting his children out of the blue.
Oh, my God.
Tito would return to Moscow in August of 1936, soon after the outbreak of the Spanish Civil War.
Right.
At that time, the Great Purge was underway, and the foreign communists like Tito and his Yugoslav compatriots were particularly vulnerable. Despite Tito writing a laudatory report about the veteran Yugoslav communist Filipović. Filipović was arrested and shot by the Soviet secret police, the NKVD.
Philly Filipović.
I think he plays for the Celtics. However, before the purge really began to erode the ranks of the Yugoslav communists in Moscow, Tito was sent back to Yugoslavia with a new mission: to recruit volunteers for the international brigades being raised to fight on the Republican side in the Spanish Civil War. Traveling via Vienna, he reached the coastal port city of Split in December of 1936. According to the Croatian historian Ivo Bonic, the reason the Comintern sent Tito back to Yugoslavia was to purge the Communist Party. An initial attempt to send 500 volunteers to Spain by ship failed, when nearly all the volunteers were arrested and imprisoned. Tito then traveled to Paris, rearranged the volunteers' travel to France under the cover of attending the Paris exhibition. Once in France, the volunteers crossed the Pyrenees to Spain. In all, he sent 1,192 men to fight in the war, but only 330 came from Yugoslavia. The rest were expatriates in France, Belgium, the United States, and Canada. Fewer than half were communists, and the rest were social democrats and anti-fascists of different varieties. Of the total, 671 were killed in fighting, and 300 were wounded.
Damn.
Tito himself never went to Spain, despite speculation that he had.
So what did he do then?
No, he was just, like, organizing and sending people. Like, he never actually went and fought there himself.
Gotcha.
Between May and August of 1937, he traveled several times between Paris and Zagreb, organizing the movement of volunteers and creating a separate Communist Party of Croatia. The new party was inaugurated at a conference at Samobor on the outskirts of Zagreb on August 1st and 2nd in 1937. Tito would play a crucial role in organizing the return of Yugoslav volunteers from the German concentration camps to Yugoslavia when this decision was made eventually to mount an uprising in Yugoslavia, the 1941 uprising in Serbia. In June of 1937, Gorkic was summoned to Moscow, where he was arrested and, after months of NKVD interrogation, was shot.
You say months of interrogation?
Yeah.
Months.
So months of torture.
Months. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. They don't make men like they used to.
According to Banach, Gorkic was killed on Stalin's orders. West concludes that despite being in competition with men like Gorkic for the leadership of the Communist Party, it was not in Tito's character to have innocent people sent to their deaths. Received a message from the Politburo of the Communist Party to join them in Paris. In August of 1937, he became the acting general secretary of the Communist Party. He later explained that he survived the purge by staying out of Spain, where the NKVD was active, and also by avoiding visiting the Soviet Union as much as possible. Which is, like, very true, because, like, the NKVD killed, like, one of the reasons, like, why the Republicans lost the Civil War, among a number of them, was that Stalin just had them, like, round up all the communists that weren't the communists they liked and had them all killed. Good. You know, while they're fighting alongside them in the war.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's a good fighter, but he's also an anarchist, so he's going to have to get shot. And that guy, he looks like a Trotskyite. Do you see his glasses? Those are fucking Trotsky glasses. Get his ass.
Look at the long, sloping brow. Don't confuse it.
He also promoted the idea that the upper echelons of the... when he was first appointed as General Secretary, he avoided... traveling to Moscow by insisting that he needed to deal with some disciplinary issues in Paris with the Communist Party. He also promoted the idea that the upper echelons of the Communist Party should be sharing the dangers of underground resistance within the country. He developed a new, younger leadership team that was loyal to him, including the Slovene Edvard Kardelj, the Serb Aleksandar Rankovic, and the Montenegrin Milovan Delas.
Aleksandar Rankovic. Sounds familiar.
They all go on to be, like, leaders in, like, post-war Yugoslavia.
Mm.
Like, I've heard of Delos before. In December of 1937, Tito arranged a demonstration to greet the French foreign minister when he visited Belgrade, expressing solidarity with the French against Nazi Germany. The protest march numbered 30,000 and turned into a protest against the neutrality policy of the Stojdinovic government. It was eventually broken up by the police, and in March of 1938, Tito returned
to Yugoslavia. Our boy about to get arrested again? This is going to get taken up. He's just leaving. They're pulling him into the wagon. And he's just like, this shit ain't nothing.
There he is, get him.
This shit ain't nothing to me, dog.
It's okay. One of those.
Been in every jail. I've been in Attica. I was in Sing Sing.
I've been in San Quentin. It's fine. It's just another place.
It's like Indiana Jones. So, like, right this way, sir. And they just direct him into a truck, and then when the door shuts and the facade falls off, it's just a police van.
This shit ain't nothing to me, dog.
In March of 1938. He returned to Yugoslavia from Paris. Hearing a rumor that his opponents within the Communist Party had tipped off the police, he traveled to Belgrade rather than Zagreb and used a different passport. While in Belgrade, he stayed with a young intellectual, Vladimir Didier, who was a friend of Delos. Arriving in Yugoslavia a few days ahead of the Anschluss between Nazi Germany and Austria, he made an appeal condemning it, in which the Communist Party was joined by the Social Democrats and trade unions.
Okay.
In June, he wrote to the Comintern suggesting that he should visit Moscow. He waited in Paris for 2 months for a Soviet visa before traveling to Moscow via Copenhagen.
Hmm.
In all, he arrived in Moscow on August 24th. On his arrival, he found that all Yugoslav communists were under suspicion. The NKVD arrested and executed nearly all of the Communist Party's most prominent leaders, including over 20 members of the Central Committee.
What are they under suspicion for?
Just not being... one, it's the purges, so everybody's under suspicion, but because they're, like, foreign.
They're not being woke enough. is this kind of like the Red Scare, but for over there?
Essentially, the logic is that Stalin needed, like, absolute loyalty, and if he suspected that if any of these, like, foreign communists weren't going to toe the line and, like, follow him, that he considered them, like, expendable.
Okay.
And impossible, like, essentially, like, a lot of it was, too, that, like, if he thought that anybody could be, like, would, like, want to make, like, a separate peace with Germany or, like, overthrow him or do any kind of other thing,
a separate
like, he
peace.
Would have you eliminated.
Calm down there, Finney.
Both Tito's ex-wife Polka and his wife Koenig were arrested as imperialist spies. Both were eventually released, Polka after 27 months in prison.
I mean, they were both spies, right?
Well, they weren't spies. They were, I don't know what Polka was doing at that time, but like
probably spying, doing spy shit.
What do you call
but,
this?
But, like, Koenig
what do you call
was
this,
just like
dude?
A waitress.
How do you research for an episode and you don't know what Polka's doing all the time? You knew we were going to ask. You knew it. You were like, that dumbass is going to ask me about Polka.
Let me get out the Polka book.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The Norton Critical Polka.
Tito, therefore, needed to make arrangements for the care of Zarko, who was 14 at the time. He placed him at a boarding school outside Kharkov, then at a school
did
at
he escape?
Penza. But he ran away twice, and then was eventually taken in by a friend's mother. In 1941, Zarko joined the Red Army to fight the invading Germans. Some of Tito's critics argue that his survival indicates that he must have denounced his comrades as Trotskyites. He was asked for information on a number of his fellow Yugoslav communists, but according to his own statements and published documents, he never denounced anyone, usually saying that he did not know them.
Okay.
In one case, he was asked about the Croatian communist leader, Kamilo Horvatin, but wrote ambiguously, saying that he did not know whether he was a Trotskyite. Nevertheless, Horvatin was never heard from again.
Amazing.
While in Moscow, he was given the task of assisting Kopic, to translate the history of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union into Serbo-Croatian. And they had only got to the second chapter when Kopic too was arrested and executed. He worked on with a fellow surviving Yugoslav communist, but a Yugoslav communist of German ethnicity reported an inaccurate translation of a passage and claimed it showed Tito was a Trotskyite. Other influential communists vouched for him, and he was exonerated. A second Yugoslav communist denounced him, but the action backfired and his accuser was arrested. Several factors were at play in his survival, mainly his working-class origins, lack of interest in intellectual arguments about socialism, attractive personality, and the capacity to make influential friends.
Okay.
See, because he wasn't on Twitter bitching about how his type of communism is the best type of communism and how much better it is, you know, he wasn't getting got.
Yeah.
He was just a cool guy that liked to have fun, okay?
Oh, God, don't do the cool guy meme.
Just a cool guy coming to the purges to have a good time.
He's just a very effective war maker. His son went on to be being crowned Count Dante of the Black Dragon Fighting Society.
Jesus Christ.
In the next episode, we'll talk about Tito's wartime career, where he becomes a partisan leader and one of the most influential leaders in the war.
Why'd you say partisan? Like you were talking about the cheese, you know? Yeah, let me get some of that partisan.
So that, boys, is the beginning of our series on Josef
Tito Jackson.
Braz Tito Jackson.
Where's Tito?
Handmade vodka.
Josef Bob.
Josef Bros Tito's handmade vodka.
Josef Bros Tito Jackson the Fifth.
Every Yugo comes with a bottle of Tito.
Drive your Yugo with your Tito's tonight. Oh my God. Okay, bro. Good night.
Good night.
Bye.